യോഗേന ചിത്തസ്യ പദേന വാചാം മലം ശരീരസ്യ ച വൈദ്യകേന യോപാകരോത്തം പ്രവരം മുനീനാം പതഞ്ജലിം പ്രാഞ്ജലിരാനതോസ്മി സ്തുവേ പതഞ്ജലിം വ്യാസം ശങ്കരം ച മുനിത്രയം കർത്തൃസൂത്രസ്യ ഭാഷ്യസ്യ ക്രമാത് വിവരണസ്യ ച. So we have already finished our discussion on the five types of vrittis: pramana, viparya, vikalpa, nidra, smriteha. Five vrittis. So we had to remember what are vrittis. Vrittis are nothing but a residual effect of whatever we do consciously. Not only physical actions, even the words we speak, a thought, flash of ideas in our mind, all will create some impact, some lasting impression, even after the particular action is completed, and could have an effect on our character. So what we do is often determined by our character, and what we do also will contribute to the formation of our character. So both are equally important. The impact of our actions on our character, and of course the influence of our character on our actions, both are equally right. Patanjali's special contribution in this context is a thorough scientific psychological analysis of the effect of what we do, what we think, what we experience on our mind and character. So anything that we do will produce an after effect, which remains, which lasts even after the action is completed. It is not physical action alone that's meant. Here, action means a word, a deed, a thought, an idea that flashes in our mind. Also will leave a lasting impression in our mind. These are fivefold. That's the discussion we have completed. Pramana, viparya, vikalpa, nidra, smriteha. So those who are attending for the first time or may have missed the last classes can listen to last week's classes, of course. Now the question arises, how to confront this problem? We cannot separate our present from the past and future from the present. So whatever we do will create an effect. So Patanjali gives a very simple method. If a person develops dispassion, detachment here doesn't have its negative connotation as often. It has got in social or family context. Detachment here means our ability to detach ourselves mentally from some unpleasant or undesirable tendencies that may be left in the mind from previous actions. So, to free ourselves from the influence, from the trap of previous experiences. So, abhyasa vairagya abhyam tad nirodha. Nirodha means restriction. Restriction of vrittis. We have to remember, yoga itself is defined as chitta vritti nirodha. Yoga chitta vritti nirodha. That is Patanjali's own definition of yoga. The translation may be something like this: cessation of waves. This English translation. So, Nirodha means complete restriction. Here, there are two stages in restraining our tendencies. First, refining, sublimating our tendencies, and then absolute freedom from those tendencies. So, there are two stages. The best way to detach ourselves, to separate ourselves from a negative influence, the best way to do is to get attached to a positive factor. The best way to move away from the east is to keep moving to the west. If we move to the north or to the south, you can't be sure you'll be moving away from the east. So the only certain sure way of moving away from the east is to try to move towards the west. So first, we must try to attach ourselves to a higher ideal. And when we attach ourselves to a higher ideal, a spiritual ideal. For example, the commentators give some very interesting suggestions. Thinking of the impermanence of worldly pleasures will give us a degree of dispassion. Very often we get attached to things under the impression that what we are attached to is permanent. Too much of attachment to money, wealth, sensory pleasures are rooted in the wrong notion that sensory pleasures will bring lasting peace or happiness, which it doesn't, of course. So once we understand these sensory pleasures are impermanent, they are not everlasting, then we won't go after something which we know to be sure will come to an end one day. We don't get attached to things which we know to be perishable or to be impermanent. So constant remembrance of the impermanence of the worldly pleasures, empirical things, is one way of for liberating ourselves from this trap of attachment towards worldly things. Very often, the circumstances themselves will catch you by the throat. The tragic events, setbacks, tragedies in life may give us a kind of detachment or dispassion. But in the coming sutras, Patanjali deals with that problem. So the word Vashikara is used, you find after 2-3 sutras, Vashikara. Vashikara means not just dispassion or feeling of aversion towards worldly things, but it is supported and reinforced by a great desire for higher spiritual values. So there is on the one hand a movement away from worldly attachments, and on the other hand, there is a movement towards higher spiritual ideas. So one negative movement, which again leads to positive movement. We will discuss this subject in the coming sutras. So, Patanjali in the 12th verse, Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tad Nirodhaka. Restriction of these vrittis is possible through constant practice of detachment, dispassion. This constant practice of detachment, again, yet repeat, is not possible unless we realize the fact that what actually attracts us to this world is impermanent. Or often it may bring negative result. We work hard, but the result could be opposite. We may help a person with a great enthusiasm and love and friendship, and that person's reaction may be just the opposite of what we expect. So many of these events could produce a kind of dispassion. But the point is that dispassion should eventually become a higher understanding, higher philosophical ideal of a conviction of the impermanence of worldly bondages, worldly relationship. That's one thing. If the banks collapse, that's when immediately if you visit a crematorium, or if you go to when we attend some funeral services of near and dear ones, it could happen. Oh, suddenly we are confronting with a stark reality that life is not eternal. But that is short-lived. That's a very, very momentary impulse. That should become a higher ideal when we try to understand the fact this body, this world, all that we care for should one day come to an end. It doesn't mean that we should run away from life. It does not mean that we should take a very negative view of life. Not at all. It should give us the wisdom, the understanding that what we normally care for, consider to be of supreme value, and the attachment that it brings in creates grief and agonies. Once this happens, suddenly we can take out this passion. So anyway, to give an example, Sri Ramakrishna gives a very interesting thing. You know, he says this higher dispassion should be with us all the time. Keep it in your pocket somewhere. So when we confront a problem, we must take out. So this knowledge should be kept somewhere at the back of the mind. So whenever we are at the verge of doing something wrong to ourselves or to others, out of greed or out of desire for enjoyment, suddenly we should take out this weapon of dispassion, higher spiritual wisdom. The idea, the conviction, the fact that it is all impermanent. So that this idea should be repeated. It should be repeated. As I mentioned in the last class, we should continue that discussion. In this context, Vyasa, the great commentator, says, our mind flows in two directions. I give this example. One flow is towards positive, higher, in the direction of spiritual ideas, lasting peace and happiness. The other direction is in the opposite direction. So there's I shall just read that part of the commentary, because Patanjali spoke very little. He thought very little. Only aphorisms, you know, sutras. So his ideas were brought out and preserved the posterity by the great commentator Vyasa, Vijnana Bhikshu, and many others, you know. So Chitta Nadi Nama Ubhaya Tapo Vahini Vakati. So here Vyasa says, the river of the mind. So mind is like a river. It flows in both directions. Ubhaya tapo vahini vahati. It means it moves in both directions. Kalyanaya vahati, papaya cha. One direction towards our good, positive. If we go on doing good things, thinking good thoughts, focusing higher ideals, then the mind starts flowing in the positive direction. On the other hand, bad ideas, bad thoughts, bad actions will make the river of the mind flow in the negative direction. And he says, Yatu Kaivalya Pragbhara Viveka Vishaya Nimna Sa Kalyanavaha. So one direction, it is an auspicious way of life if we allow our mind to move in the positive direction. But one important factor, you should have this dispassion. So this kind of detachment. I should repeat, you know, detachment is not a negative value here. Detachment is a positive spiritual value that we practice for our own goods. When we are attached to certain things which really may not be good, and we want to get out of that trap, out of that trap of obsession or obsessive attachment to certain things, though we struggle hard and we are convinced of the need to get out of this trap, there is always a conflict between mind and intellect. We want to do something, but we are not able to do it when we actually try to do. So mind doesn't cooperate when we actually try to get out of this trap. If mind cooperates with the intellect, there'd be no problem in the world. If we could do whatever we want to do, at least for spiritual seekers, then everything will be easy. But it doesn't happen. So what happens, when we actually try to do that, suddenly this accumulated bundle of vrittis, impressions from previous activities, coming from previous life, create a stumbling mental block, and we find a conflict between what we want to do and what we eventually end up doing. What we do is determine the mind, emotions, ideas, impulses. What we want to do is determined by some higher ideas which we have accumulated, our analytical power, discriminatory faculty, which may have developed, but it doesn't cooperate with the mind. So in such a situation, Patanjali says, repeat. Once you repeat more and more, then you find the mind slowly begins to cooperate with the intellect. The mental blocks become weaker, and the mind slowly begins to cooperate. The opposite direction is described by Vyasa, samsara pragbhara avivek vishenimna papavaha. Another one. Another direction towards which the mind, the river of mind flows. Samsara means, samsara actually in Sanskrit, samsarati iti samsara. You see, samsarati means that it goes flowing. Here, the flow is not in the straight line direction, but it is completely like a rotation, like a wheel that we know. Birth, then all kinds of activities, pain and pleasure, people cry, weep, and also enjoy happiness and unhappiness, pain and pleasure, both sides of the coin, and then finally, life comes to an end, and Yoga and Vedanta, Buddhism, most Indian theistic traditions believe in reincarnation or rebirth. Life is not just one chance. Life is not something that begins with birth and comes to an end with a piece of stone in the cemetery. When the body is pushed through the tube in the crematorium, life doesn't come to an end. It is like a change of flight, That's how you board another flight after some time. But you carry with you this bundle of prithis, vasanas, samskaras, and with that you are born again, which explains why Lord Krishna gives a great promise in the Gita. See, you are never late and nothing is lost. So in the sixth chapter of Gita, Dhyana Yoga, Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna. Arjuna asks this question. Well, I try to meditate, I do good things, the river of the mind flows in the positive direction, as Vyasa says, and also in the negative direction. And we cannot be sure all the time. So suppose people die before they reach the highest enlightenment. Does it mean that everything is lost? So Lord Krishna says, Tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade paurodehikam yatateja tatho bhuyasam siddhu kurunantana. Krishna says, nothing is lost. If you meditate only a little in this life, or do a few good deeds, read some holy books, some noble deeds, something you have done, a kind of spiritual deposit you have created, you'll be born again with that. So that you inherit that spiritual wealth which you have deposited in the bank in this life, spiritual bank. And then you continue your spiritual progression, your journey, next life. That's why yatateja tadobhuya, I mean from that point where you left your journey in this life, from that point, you continue your spiritual journey in the next life. Again, bhuya means again. So there's a natural tendency for people who have done a lot of good spiritual deeds, spiritual practices in the previous life. The natural tendency, not a labored action, but a natural tendency. If our natural tendency is towards good, it means we have brought a lot of good deeds, good vrittis as the spiritual capital that we have inherited from previous life, which are built up in previous life. Others cannot make any contribution. We alone can put this money in the bank, this wealth of tendencies, impressions, and samskaras. So in that respect, we are all individual pilgrims, you know, not collective. So if we go on doing good deeds, then what happens, you know, then the river of the mind starts flowing in the positive direction. Tatra vairagyena visayasrotaha khilikriyade vivekadashana abhyasena vivekasrotaha udghatide. So what happens, you know, when the flow towards discriminative wisdom is opened through the practice of discrimination. Means discrimination here, you would understand often when you read English translation of many of these Sanskrit texts, the word discrimination is used, it should be understood. Discerning wisdom, that's what it means. So when you reach a higher degree of spiritual maturity, cultural maturity, when we develop the ability to see through things and to decide for ourselves what is noble, what is desirable, what is good for others and good for ourselves, when we choose those actions, the ability to make that decision is called a higher discerning wisdom. It's called viveka in Sanskrit. That's what is meant by the word discrimination, which is used by translating these verses into English. Because in American social history, political history, the word has got a connotation. So I just want to let you know that discrimination that is used in many of the translations actually means spiritual wisdom, spiritual maturity that automatically comes to us when we evolve spiritually to decide what is good, what is noble, what is appropriate, what is righteous, and also to avoid what is inauspicious, what is ignoble, what is undesirable. That kind of spiritual wisdom is the meaning of the Sanskrit word viveka. So that's used here. So once we have this viveka, viveka dasana abhyasena, once we have this discerning faculty, we can use this discerning faculty again and again. That's the meaning of abhyasa, means repetition. Then what happens? The mind suddenly starts flowing in the positive direction. That's what Vyasa. So Vyasa has given a grand illustration of how our mind works. The river of the mind flows in both the directions, could flow in both directions. Now, of course, we introduced this subject in the last class. Now we are going to the 13th sutra. Tatrasthido yetnaha abhyasaha. Now what is abhyasa? So in the 12th sutra, a method is introduced or explained as to how to control these vrittis, tendencies, impressions. I mean constant practice. There is one point to be kept in mind at a psychological level. So once we take the first step in spiritual practice, the second step will be easier, so much easier. Because mind evolves in ascending order. As mind accumulates positive spiritual tendencies, the mind also evolves, and then the gradual ascending evolution of the mind will become so much easier step by step. This constant attempt to practice. Now, in the last Sunday, you know, I had to speak on the subject Buddha's contribution to Buddha thought. Buddha as outlined, eightfold discipline that takes us out of this trap of Four Noble Truths, Chattvari Arya Satyani. Arya means noble, so I remember. Four Noble Truths. Arya in Sanskrit means noble. So there is a 10th century dictionary written by Amarasimha. It's called Amarakosha. Kosha means lexicon, dictionary. So it's written by Amarakosha. It is not the earliest, but it is one of the most important dictionaries on Sanskrit language attributed to the great lexicographer with the name Amarasimha, who lived in 10th century AD. It is called Amarakosha. So there he defines who is an Arya. Mahakula kulinarya sadbhya sajjana sathavaha Arya. You know, it is a metrical, that's why we repeat like this. It's like a verse, like a song. Dictionary in the form of a song. So who is an Arya? He is a highly evolved person who has inherited a great spiritual tradition, born into good culture, and who is refined, cultured, civilized. Such a person is called Arya. So the Four Noble Truths with Buddha outlined, you know, about dukkha, higher spiritual, which is called Parinama Dukkha, as Patanjali calls it. One important element of the Eightfold Path is Sammik Ajiva, Sammik Vyayama, Sammik Walk. Three of them are very important. One is proper righteous livelihood, righteous effort, righteous actions, and proper word. That means proper language you speak, proper effort, and an appropriate means of livelihood. These are three important elements here. Now, the point is, when we concentrate on these three elements, what really happens is our external actions will be naturally directed towards higher purposes. Ajiva means livelihood. Vyaya means effort. And Sammik Walk means speech. So it is easier for us to give a direction to what we do at a physical level than giving direction to what we do at the psychological, mental, or intellectual level. Because mind doesn't cooperate. We cannot have as much control on what our mind does, our thoughts and ideas, as we have control on what we do at the physical level. So constant repetition of good actions, good efforts, will produce a kind of energy, a spiritual wealth, when it is done with a degree of dispassion. And then what happens, this physical energy becomes spiritual energy. So if a person goes on speaking good words only and have a very noble, appropriate means of livelihood, and if he does only good actions, Sammik Vyayama, then he will naturally evolve into a good person, a good personality, and gradually these physical actions, physical energy, will be transformed into spiritual energy. So, tatra sthido yatnaha. Yatna means effort. So, we must be fully established in this dispassion. Once we can develop this dispassion, and then when we practice this dispassion in all our actions, by linking what we do to a higher spiritual transcendental ideal, then what happens, slowly we will be able to restrain our vrittis. That is tatra sthido yatnaha. What is repetition? Repetition is nothing but effort to attain steady state of mind through constant repeated practice of dispassion. When the mind suddenly agitates, or when we feel too much of anxiety for things, then we must mentally detach ourselves from it. It is not a kind of individualism or selfishness. So we have to remember, as a yoga takes into consideration one fact, we are all individual spiritual travelers, not collective, not a huge congregation or huge group is moving towards spiritual realization. Spiritual growth happens only at the individual level. It doesn't mean that we should not worry about others, but our own individual spiritual growth is linked to unselfish service we do to others, or good words, good deeds, good actions, and the practice of yama and niyama at the individual level. Once we practice yama and niyama at the individual level, then what happens is our behavior with others will be appropriate, and we also we feel inner harmony within. So this will give us a strong conviction that we are all individual travelers. We are not marching in company of others. Spiritual life is essentially individualistic. That's an important point we have to remember. What we do will become an asset, as I mentioned, tendencies, impressions, vasanas, vrittis, etc., which will determine our spiritual future. So that's why Lord Krishna, in the Gita, he stresses the importance of this abhyasa, repetition. There is a verse in the sixth chapter, 33rd verse, where Arjuna complains to Krishna. See, chanchalam hi manak Krishna, pramathi belavad dridham, tasyaham nigraham manne vayor iva sudushkaram. So Arjuna says, mind is like air. You cannot control or restrain the movement of air. Like that, we are not able to control or restrain thoughts and ideas and emotions, the mind. So Krishna, Arjuna tells Krishna. So Krishna says, asam sayam mahabahu manodir nigriham chalam abhyasenatu kaundeya vairagyana chagruhide. So abhyasa and vairagya, dispassion and repeated practice of dispassion. This method is recommended by Krishna also, Lord Krishna also in the Bhagavad Gita. But how to practice this repetition and just develop and to develop this dispassion? Step one is understanding the impermanence of empirical things. Actually, every well-educated person these days knows that money, wealth, and status, sensory pleasures, cannot bring lasting peace. Everyone knows. Even a high school student will know all that, all about it. It's true. The impermanence. But now, an understanding, an intellectual understanding of the impermanence of these things doesn't always bring dispassion. To have dispassion, we should be able to link ourselves, attach ourselves to a higher ideal. So detachment, to get detached from worldly, sensory things, we must first attach ourselves to a higher ideal. As I mentioned, to move away from the east, we must concentrate on moving towards the west. Otherwise, we won't be moving away from the east. So the first step is to get to translate or to convert this conviction of the impermanence of empirical things into a positive movement towards a higher spiritual ideal. Then dispassion will be possible, and dispassion should be repeatedly practiced in all our actions. Now, how to practice this and how long? That's a discussion in the 14th sutra. Satu dirghakala nairendarya satkara asevito dadabhumi. So satu dirghakala means for a long time. It should be practiced for a long time And then Nairandarya means without any interruption, uninterruptedly. And then Satkara Sevido, we must attach a sense of sanctity to what we do. And this is very important. Whatever we do, when we listen to these ideas, when we take up a spiritual ideas, if we do it casually, it won't work. We should be able to take it up, to look upon it with a sense of what Sanskrit language calls Shraddha, which, if I have to translate that in English, I may have to use one full passage. Integrity, sincerity, earnestness, a sense of sanctity. So in spiritual life, everything is determined by the amount of saddha that we possess. Sense of sanctity. And even Lord Krishna in the Gita gives a very, almost a shocking proclamation at the 18th chapter. After teaching all the four yogas, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, Vedanta, Sankhya, everything, how to meditate, how to practice nishkama karma, I mean unselfish action, meditation, everything. After teaching all the great spiritual teachings, Lord Krishna makes a very interesting statement. It comes in the 18th chapter. The verse is this: idam te na tapaskaya na bhaktaya kadachana na cha asrushave vakyam na yomam abhyasuyati. The meaning is this: Arjuna, after teaching all these great teachings, Lord Krishna says, never teach this to this particular individual. What kind of individual? A person who has no tapa, who doesn't make any effort with concentration to learn this or to understand this. Lord Krishna says, don't throw a pearl before the swine. Jesus was much more open. He used the word swine. But Lord Krishna doesn't go to that extent. Never teach this to a person who doesn't deserve it, who doesn't have a care for these teachings. So don't teach him. Idam te na tapas na bhaktaya, who has no devotion to this idea. I have no devotion either to teaching or the teacher or the spiritual life. And also to a person who is jealous of the teacher. Meaning, here means, if you are a professor and if you are teaching in a university, and after making a very wonderful point to the class, you overhear the student saying some very undesirable compliments. Not compliments, undesirable remarks about your teaching. It may not be a very pleasant experience. So, but you have to remember one thing. Lord Krishna's advice came, and Patanjali's Yoga Sutra was written at a time and in an age where the teachers taught without salary and the students did not pay fees. So Patanjali taught these great teachings to a group of students. Some of them were elderly people, some of them very young boys or young girls, some of them princes or emperors who left their palaces, kingdoms, went to forest hermitages to learn this from the ancient Vedic sages. They all went to these forest hermitages. They didn't pay any fees. The only thing they may have taken with them was small dry twigs. It's called samit. It is nothing but fuel. Every day they have to perform homa, what you call fire sacrifice. You know, we do puja, we do fire sacrifice in a more elaborate form. They used to practice this homa, fire sacrifice, every day in the forest hermitages. There was no temple, no image worship, nothing of the kind. There were no temples in the Vedic age. Absolutely no temple in India. None of the ancient Vedic Samhitas ever mentioned any temple or any image worship, elaborate puja, worship. That's all developed in later century, later millennia. So all these disciples, and disciples included little boys, emperors, princes, householders, housewife, all of them, they went and they had to bring one thing, this dry, small, dry twigs, which they needed to keep the fire alive for this fire sacrifice. Means they will lit a fire and they will do their offerings. Fire was, the Agni was considered to be the great messenger who will take your offerings to different deities. That's why Rig Veda Samhita, the first mantra, the earliest human record of religious and spiritual tradition, Agnim Ile, that's the first mantra, Purohitam Yajnasideva Murdicham Khotaram Ratnadhatamam. So I pray, I worship God in the form of Agni. That's the first statement in the Rig Veda Samhita, the first human statement in the history of spiritual and religious practices. So they didn't pay fees, but they had to pay one great price, this Shraddha. They had to look upon what they studied with a sense of sanctity. And this sense of sanctity was called Shraddha. So that's the meaning of Satkara, the particular word used in the Patanjali Sutra, 14th Sutra. Satu Dirghakala. This repetition of dispassion, spiritual wisdom, should be practiced for a long time and should be practiced without any interruption and should be practiced with a sense of sanctity. So I remember, if you don't mind, this is a real event. About 2 years back, one gentleman came to Vedanta Society and told me that, Swamiji, you are giving the Yoga Sutra classes. I studied, so to repeat his own language, I studied the yoga philosophy, I studied the seven chakras, I studied the Ayurveda, I studied the Bhagavad Gita. All within 3 months, he studied in Mexico. So then I asked him, even to study one of these subjects properly, it will take several years. Now what it means, just it gives a, I tell you, the reason why I'm quoting this event is, the idea that these things are so simple, so easy, and to be taken in such a casual way, itself is the opposite of what Patanjali calls his satkara. Means this yoga or this dispassion is something that we have to practice every day as long as we live. It is not something that we learn, we read a novel and finish it. It's not that way. It's a matter of lifelong practice. So once we practice this, we develop a feeling of a sense of sanctity, sacredness of these great spiritual ideas, which will help us in our life. That will help us to spiritualize our everyday life, everyday actions. So that's why Patanjali uses three important words. Dirghakala means for a long time. Dirgha is interpreted by other commentators as lifelong, yavat jivam. That's the Sanskrit word used in other commentaries, Tattvaisharadi and others. Yavat jivam means as long as we live, we have to practice this spiritual wisdom. So then what, without interruption. And then, but this is possible. We can practice something for a long time without interruption only if we look upon what we practice to be something sacred, if we attach a sense of sanctity to what we practice. Then only we'll be able to practice it continuously, without a break, and also with a sense of sanctity. So that is an important point to remember. The first condition is that we must be able to look upon this as a life ideal as something sacred, as something that will take us to a higher spiritual goal. For that called satkara, asevidu, dhadabhumi. You must serve this spiritual ideal with great sense of sanctity, reverence, and respect. Because the effectiveness of our learning is in direct proportion to the sense of sanctity we attach to what we learn. Anything that we learn in a very casual manner, without attaching a sense of sanctity or importance to it, we don't learn it properly. So the effectiveness of learning, I'm talking about spiritual topics, not other subjects. Spiritual life, where we are actually playing with our own mind and our own life, the real effectiveness of learning is in direct proportion, or it's completely dependent upon the sense of sanctity that we attach to the particular subject that we are learning. So now we will have interaction, and we have almost 10 minutes, so you can raise any doubts, any clarification required on what we discussed today or previous days. You are most welcome. I'm very happy you don't have any doubt. You know, that's a great thing. That's what we want, actually. So then I will go to the next sutra. So next sutra is very important. You know, it speaks about evolving a much higher sense of dispassion. So that is the 15th sutra. So it is very. It's a long sutra. Drishta anusravika vishaya vidrishnasya vasikara samjna vairagyam. So vairagyam is defined here. So abhyasa was explained. That means repetition, constant practice. There are some commentators who emphasize the important principle of practicing it without any interruption. And they say, suppose we take a holiday in spiritual life. We can't take a holiday in spiritual life. For some days, I will not practice non-violence. So for some days, I will not practice truthfulness. Then we are not going to practice again. That's one thing. If you take a holiday, you can't return home. So that's why it's called nairantaryam. Nairantaryam means without any interruption. So in spiritual life, once we practice a break in practicing spiritual disciplines, there's a great danger. What happens once we take a break? There's a possibility of negative samskaras, undesirable vrittis and samskaras from previous life or from this life coming to the surface of the mind. And they may drive us in the opposite direction. So that is the reason why the Sanskrit word is used, nairandarya, means without any interruption. The 14th sutra. Interruption means what happens is, once there is an interruption, it's very difficult to bring us back to that practice. I have given an illustration on a few occasions earlier, but there is no better illustration, so I have to repeat it. It is the story of Jadabharata in the Bhagavata Purana, which I illustrated earlier. Why this practice of unbroken succession is important is illustrated in this story. the story of a king. His name was Bharata. He was a great emperor, a very wise man, was a very famous ruler. You know, in those days when kings felt that they already had their time, I mean, when the eldest son is grown up, is already ready to take over the reins of the kingdom, then they will declare heir apparent and the king will leave the palace and his kingdom and will go to a forest. He will build a small hut and live there practicing meditation, and some of them may also teach the Vedas to small little boys. They will spend the rest of their lifetime in contemplation, meditation, a kind of retired life in contemplation. So that's a third state in the life of an householder. That is studentship, then he becomes an householder, then becomes a retired hermit, and finally he reaches, through contemplation, he reaches the highest spiritual realization. So this king had left his palace, his kingdom, had gone to a forest, and he built a small hut on the bank of a river and started living there, spending his time in contemplation. So one day it so happened that a female deer was being chased by a lion, and there's a small stream, as I mentioned. It jumped over the stream, and in effort, it gave birth to a baby, because this female deer was pregnant and she gave birth to a small little baby deer, and it fell in the stream and the mother deer passed away, died. So the king was so compassionate that so he fell into the stream, he saved the life of the baby deer, and this deer began growing up in the hermitage with the king. The king used to protect that little baby deer from wild animals, robbers and others. But one problem started evolving in his mind. He became less punctual, regular in his meditation, contemplation, his spiritual practices. He was more focused on feeding the little baby deer, you know, and practicing vigilance to save it from wild animals in the forests. With the result that when it was time for him to die because of old age, he was not meditating on God. He was concerned about the safety of the deer. And when he died, he was born, but he was born as a deer. And he started growing in a hermitage, in the same hermitage. But because that baby deer in his previous life as a king had practiced a lot of meditation and contemplation, he did not lose that spiritual wealth that he had built up in his previous life. So that deer didn't leave the hermitage. It didn't join other wild animals. It lived there, and after some years, it died. When it was fully grown, it became old, it died. Now what happened? The king who had left his palace just to spend his lifetime in meditation and contemplation forgot that duty and focused exclusively on looking after the baby deer. And so he was born as a deer. But the deer, who was a king the previous life, as I mentioned, it inherited the spiritual culture from previous life. So it spent his whole lifetime in meditation and contemplation. And this deer was born as a great saint in next life. So what we focus on, that we become, that's the idea behind. So the lesson is, the king had left his palace to practice dispassion, meditation, contemplation, devotion, so spiritual ideals. But he forgot that. He forgot the idea of dispassion while looking after the baby deer. He could have done it as an offering to God, which is what every spiritual seeker ought to do, which he didn't, which he forgot. And as a price he had to pay for was that he was born as a deer, though the deer didn't forget its spiritual past, and it was born as a great saint the next life. So there's a three lives. So why? Because there was a break in his practice of dispassion. So sometimes if we are not vigilant in spiritual life, we may have to wait for a few more extra lives, you know. So this story, of course, is an important illustration, which means that's why one of our great spiritual teachers in the Ramakrishna tradition, one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, one of the brother disciples of Vivekananda, used to say, there is no holiday in spiritual life. So that's what Patanjali says. This dispassion, spiritual wisdom, should be practiced for a long time, dirghakala, nairandarya, means without any interruption, and with a sense of sanctity, considering this spiritual ideal as something sacred. Because when we look upon something, an ideal, a spiritual practice, as something sacred, then what happens? Our whole mind will be automatically focused on it. When whatever we consider to be important in our life, we naturally focus all our mind on it. If you can look upon this ideal as something sacred, something that to be revered, to be practiced with great sattva, mean concentration and sense of sanctity, then whole mind will be automatically focused on it. That's why he uses the word satkara asevito dhabhumi. Then what happens? Then you get fully established firmly on this ideal. That's the idea. Dhabhumi means you will be fully established, firmly grounded on this ideal. That's the idea. So we will continue the discussion in the next class. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ram Krishna Pranamastu.